So last week we ended up in the middle of Lamed Aleph by that Teiku. Now we covered something today in Shir that's back, but it was a good skills exercise, worthwhile to get it on tape for them, and a good review. So if we go back to Lamed Beis Amud Beis, right, the previous page, Beis Amud Beis, about 8 lines from the bottom, 7 lines from the bottom. The first word on the line was the word Tana. Right? So, right, you're on the right page. No, not that. Not yet.
Right. Where do you see that it's Lamed?
Okay, so here's Lamed Beis, and two dots is Beis.
Right. Yes. Every Daf Yomi is two sides.
Right.
So the daf is two sides, and this is.
Oh, so Lamed Beis. Okay.
Lamed Beis is base,
and then Lamed Beis.
It actually in yours
is one daf.
In yours it says Lamed Beis, right? In the old Gemaras, in mine here actually, is an old. It has a number. It used to be an English number or a Roman number, or not Roman number, whatever these are called, Latin number. That's. True. But the newer editions now just put in the Hebrew thing on the back, and the English number would go by regular pages. So this is page 64, even though it's 32B. Whatever. Okay, so about seven lines from the bottom. So the first one on the line, word on the line is the word Tana. So it says Tana eats avos kasher. So it said that it's talking about the Hadassim, that if it is avos, which means that it's plated, PL.
AIT.
So if it's PLAITED, it's plated. Vishaino avos pasal. And if it's not plated, then it's pasal. Okay. So hechidami. Hechidami is a keyword. Right? Hechidami means what's the case. What is a practical example of avos? I mean, hechi, to what is it similar? Meaning a real case. So Amar Rav Yehuda, who the kaima tlasa tlasa tarfe bikina. He says, this is what it means. It means that each. And it goes three and three up the base, meaning that each base, each spot of the hadas has three leaves coming out of it, which is what our common hadasim do, the ones that come from a package. They grow that way, actually. The ones that come in the package. Now, even though my students don't remember anything before that, but I remember it, and I'm sure you remember it as well. You used to have trouble finding hadasim. It used to be you had to pick out each hadas and you had to actually look at it. I remember one year specifically looking at it. That was one of my.
Oh, because it didn't have three?
It didn't have three. Right? You have to check whether there's three leaves coming out of each spot, at least the majority of the spots, right? It wasn't as. And now it all just comes in a package. So that was the story. So the kind of tlasa tarfi bikina. So that's Rav Yehuda. Rav Kahana Amar, Rav Kahana says, afilu trevachat, even if it's two and one. Meaning, even if you have two leaves from a spot and then one leaf from a spot, 2-1, 2-1, 2-1, right? He says that's enough, right? It doesn't have to be threes; twos are fine. Rav Acha Berei Derava Mahadar Atrei V'Chad Hol V'Nafim Yipume Derav Kahana. Rav Acha, the son of Rava, would specifically try to get a hadas like that. He would specifically try to get a hadas that was two leaves and one leaf. Because Rav Kahana said it, it came out of the mouth of Rav Kahana. Now that itself is a very interesting thing, right? The Rishonim comment that Rav Acha agrees that the three leaves are better, right? That's certainly more hadar, it's certainly nicer to have the three leaves from once, but in order he wanted to prove a point. He wanted to prove his Rebbe's point that that it was, that the two and one is fine. Yeah, I gave a couple of other examples. We have a couple examples of that, times like that, where, like, to prove a point, you end up doing the more makel thing, but to show that that's the way we hold. Good. So that's that. So Amar Lei, so Mar Bar Maymar turned to Rav Ashi. Right, Rav Ashi's name has not been mentioned yet, I don't think, but he turned to Rav Ashi Abba. La Hu Hadas Shota Karilei. He said, that Hadas is a foolish hadas. Meaning that's called a hadas shota. Not that it's literally foolish, it's that it grows in a wild way. It's a wild, foolish, it's whatever that is. So the question I raised today, and I'll raise to you, is what does that statement mean? Right? What does that statement mean, that it's a hadas shota? Right? So without thinking, what would our first reaction would be? What do you think?
It's not a good example.
What do you mean it's not a good example?
Well, it's like it's foolish, or it's like a silly, not a serious example.
No. It's not commenting on the. No, the example that was given was the three leaves from one spot. Someone else comes along and says two leaves from one spot, and he turns around and says, no, that, I think he's talking about the hadas. I don't know. That hadas is called the hadas shota. So what does that mean that it's called the hadas shota? Are you at either of you at the shir on Sunday morning that Rabbi Soloveitchik gave?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. He started with a similar type of question, right? You know the Gemara where someone asks if he could learn Chachmas Yevanis? Have you ever heard this Gemara? It's a famous theme in the Talmud where one of the Tanayim asks, can I learn Chachma Yevanis? Yes, another Tana, when can I learn Greek wisdom, whatever that means? So the response was, the Pasuk tells us, V'gisa bo yom v'layla, you have to study yom v'layla, right? Find me a time that's not day, and that's night, and not night, and that's the time that you can have to study Chachma Yevanis. So, what kind of answer is that? Right, it's an ambiguous answer. So, is that why didn't he say no, or why didn't he say yes? Like, well, what kind of answer is that? So, the whole shir, his whole shir, was developing that idea. The shir was what does that mean? What is that? How does that answer have to do with the question? Another time. So here also, lahu hadashota karle. That's called the hadashota. So whenever there's an ambiguous term like that, you have to say, well, wait a second. I mean, my first reaction was, oh, he's calling that. Puzzle.
But it's two and one, so you still have three.
Right.
And then it's another two and one, so you're still in groups of three.
Right. Well, you're analyzing whether it should be kosher or not. Yes, that could be a discussion. But your question is, well, wait a second, two and one, that should really be like three. Maybe, maybe not. Rav Ashi is calling that a hadas shota. So whatever that is, however you want to analyze it, whether it be good or not, he calls it that. He calls it a hadas shota. So my question is, what does he mean by calling it a hadas shota? Does it mean that it's pasul? Does it mean that it's kasher? Does it mean that it's hadar? Does it mean that it's not? What does he mean by that line?
Well, you would think, because it's a negative adjective, I mean, that it would mean that it's not okay.
Or maybe it's not the preferable way. But when pushed, because you have no other option, then it's a way to get to use one when there's no other
available. Very good. So you both got the conflict. Very good. So take a look. If you notice, next to the word where it says Rav Ashi Abba Lahu Hadas Shota, that line, those five words, right? So you'll notice that there is, I'm not sure we've done this yet, there's a little letter right before that. You see that's the letter Ches, right? So what does that letter Ches do? Right, so that letter Ches is like a form of a footnote. Very good. It goes to the top right. This side of the page is the top right. The verse is Ein Mishpat Ner Mitzvah. Right, you see, and Ches is the bottom one. Right, the bottom one that list says Zion and Ches. Right. Now, by the way, it also says Lamed.
Yeah.
You see that? So what's that Lamed doing?
The Ches is next to it.
Oh, okay.
Right. So the Lamed is a count from the beginning of the Perek. You see that? This page starts at Chaf Dalet. The previous page covers from Yud Zayin to Chaf Gimel. The previous page is Yud Dalet to Yud Zayin. Right. That keeps a count from the beginning of the Perek.
Okay.
And the little letters is a count of the halachos on the page itself.
Okay.
Okay? So Ches is the same as Zayin, right? And it points you to Mem Yud Yud stands for Maimonides Sham Perek Zayin Halacha Beis, okay, meaning in Pilchas Lulav, that's what the Sham means. Sham means Ibid, right? I'm not sure what Ibid actually means, but it means that, right? It means go to the previous source, and it's a slightly different spot. And Tes Vav Shin Ayin stands for Tur Shulchan Aruch, Sham Sif Gimel, right? So it also means Sham Ibid. So Sif Gimel in that. So what's that? So we go one above. And the one above where it says Tur Shulchan Aruch, it also says Sham, Sif Beis. Okay, so you go one above that. And the one above that, it says Tur Shulchan Aruch, Orachayim, Aleph Ches stands for Orachayim, Simin Tuf Resh Mem Vav, Sif Vav. So we're going to go to Tuf Resh Mem Vav, Sif Gimel. Right? Because we're at the bottom, we're at Ches, so we're going to Tuf Resh Mem Vav, Sif Gimel. Right? So open up the Mishnah Berurah that we have. So that the Mishnah Berurah on top of the page is
Seif Gimel.
So Tuf Resh, you know, you're looking for Tuf Resh Mem Vav. Right? So if you look at the top of the page,
Tuf Resh
So you're looking at this figure here?
No, you're looking at the top. See where it says Simon Tafresh Mem Dal. So you're very close already. So you, that's Tafresh Mem Hey. Now you want to go one more page.
Tafresh.
Or so.
I'm not seeing where the letters
are. Up here. So Simon. Right there at
oh,
the top.
Simon. Oh, say
so Tafresh. You go one Mem Hey. So you want to go another page.
I'm not going to do that.
Mem Vav.
Mem Vav.
There you go.
Got it.
So now Tafresh Mem Vav, you see on the top it says, how are you doing?
Not good at learning the alphabet. Tough, Rachel.
That's what happens when you do your Hebrew learning as an adult. You don't learn the alphabet.
That's right. The
Lamed Mem. I'm
the
getting
crash
there.
Course. Lamed.
Tough, Rachel, Lamed. I know Mem is after Lamed.
Right, the NJAP crash course, right, doesn't teach all of these in order.
Mem.
Vav. So you're
well, I
there.
I learned my Hebrew.
Let's
Gimel.
So this is, right, go probably a Tafresh Mem.
I learned my Hebrew in an Olpan, so for sure they didn't teach me all
right, you're almost there.
Tafresh Mem Vav.
Yeah, probably two pages earlier. Yeah.
You actually do pick it up. It's just like certain spots of the alphabet, you're not quite sure what comes
yeah,
next.
Yeah, the Samach Ayin Pei still has.
Yeah. I hear Uncle Moishi in my head.
There you go. Tafresh Mem Vav. So you see this Sif Gimel. You see there's Aleph is where it begins. The second line has a Bez. And the third line, the fifth line from the top has a Gimel. You see that? Okay. So there it says Anafetz Avos Amar B'Torah, right? So that word Anafetz Avos that send the Torah. So what is that? So Hu Hadas Shalav Chofen Eseitzo. That is a Hadas where the Olav, right, where the leaves cover the branch. Kagon, for example, Gimel Alan Oyoser, right? It has three Alan or more. That's it, right? That's the next Gemara mentions maybe it's seven, whatever. That has three Alan or more. So it says Begvul Echad at one juncture. About im hayu shnei ha'olim b'shava, right? However, if you have two equal to one, or ze k'neged ze, v'ha'ola ha'shlishi, and then it has a third leaf, l'mala mehem, right above it, ein ze avos, that is not considered avos, that's not considered plated, aval nikra hadas shote, but rather it's called a hadas shote. Now, the Machaber never actually says that, and therefore it's possible. Right, he never actually says that. He just says that it's not called avos. Now that's a pretty strong statement. I mean, that pretty much means that he means pasul, but he doesn't actually clearly and undeniably say it. So the Haggah, and when it continues on the Haggah, that's the Ramah, right? The Mechaber is Rav Yosef Karo. It's writing for Sfardim. That was the original text, mm-hmm. right? And then the Ramah, Rav Moshe Issel, has commented on that. He instead of writing his own Shulchan Aruch for Ashkenazim, because he had complaints about the methodology that Rav Yosef Karo used, he wrote his own thing. He made comments. He made notes on the Mechaber, he says, "Oh, you know, us in Ashkenaz, we do things differently. Sometimes it's a comment, sometimes it's an objection, sometimes it's another opinion, right?" He does a lot of different things. So here he says, he starts off by saying, "Upasel," and it's pasel. Meaning, let me just clarify what the Mechaber was saying, right? Pasel, afilu b'shas adchak, right? There is even b'shas adchak, even a difficult time, right? Rav Yosef Karo held, right, that a hadas that is not have three leaves from the base is 100% pasul, right? It is no law. It's not a hadas. It's something else. Okay, so that's opinion number one. But then it continues and says on the second line, v'ika manda amar b'gemara. There is another opinion. The Gemara, the kasher. That it is kasher. This 2-in-1 thing, right? V'al korchach. Therefore, noagin be'elu ha-medinos l'charchila latseis be'elu ha-adasim. There are those that have the custom in certain countries l'charchila to use those hadasim ha-movim that are brought. Ve'ein gimel alin b'gvul echad. And they don't have these three leaves in one spot. Ve'yesh mishakasav. And there are those that write also the hadasim shalanu ein nikrim hadas shota, that our hadasim are not actually called the hadas shota. Hoel v'heim beiz al gav beiz, but it's not actually 2-in-1, 2-in-1, 2-in-1. Ours is 2-2-2-2-2. Ve'ino kadna shotas, that's not a hadza shota, niska b'gemara. Ve'achein nagu lahakel, koshakasa ma'ri kolon, ma'ri islov, zal bitshuvo sehem. And therefore we have the minhag to be makel, like the maharik, those from the shir last week, that's the same person, right? The maharik, and the mahari iserlin, that is the truma sadeshin. Okay, so both of those are sources for this idea that the 2-2-2-2-2 might be okay. And they even go on so far as to say that our 3-3-3s might not even be good. Why? Because those aren't really hadassim. Those are actually morkavs. Those are actually graphs. Those aren't actually perfect. Okay, so the Ramah now comes along and says, right, regardless of this 2-2-2-2 business, he says, the 2-1, some have the tradition to do so. There's a Manda Amar and the Gemara. It's not just a Manda Amar and the Gemara we disagree, meaning sometimes we'll say, like, there's a Manda Amar and the Gemara, like, okay, we don't, it's thrown out, right? We don't agree with it at all. However, this is a little bit different than just a regular
disagreement.
The regular disagreement. Why is this a little bit different? It's not just Rabbi Yehuda says this, and Rabbi says this, and Shmuel says this, and Rabbi says this, right? This is a little bit different.
It's actually
than that.
What people are practicing.
Did it.
It's based
exactly.
on what they see happen.
Very
happen.
Good, right? He did it. He did it, and not only did he do it, but there's no going back. And there's some other times where we might have Amorim do things, and they say, "Well, okay, but you know, the din derabanan is that you shouldn't do it." Okay, so they didn't keep the din derabanan. Here, he picked up something. Right, and he said, "I'm being yotzi with my hadas in this way," and we have a rule in the Gemara that's learned in the beginning of Chulin that tzaddikim don't do wrong, like Hakadosh Baruch Hu won't allow tzaddikim to do the wrong thing. Right, so if he purposely went and did something else, so it's hard to say that it's completely thrown out.
So it's almost going backwards. You're seeing what they're doing, and you're finding a way. You're finding the halacha to.
Very
sort
good.
Of support it based on the Gemara.
Well,
you're finding
a way to
interpret the Gemara to support what they're doing.
Right. Well, he's saying. I think what he's saying is that some people have the tradition going back to him, going back to Rav Acha. That was the way I might have read it. I read that people have this tradition going back there, right? Where they found the support, or knew the support, or understood the support. I'm not sure how that works exactly.
And that's because he actually said, "I take 2+1, and that's okay."
Right, but I think that's my suggestion. I didn't actually go further, but I think that's what it is. But somebody actually did it, that gives it a lot more weight. Now, one more note here. Now, you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah. Now, the Mishnah, let's figure out how to do this, right? Where it says where he quoted this idea, right? V'lachein nahagu lahakel. You see that about the last line, right? It says, "Therefore, we have the custom to be lenient." Or in those places we have a custom to be lenient. So there's a little tesvav there, right? There's a tesvav in parentheses.
I mean up here.
Right.
Oh, yeah, right there.
Right, so the tesvav in parentheses goes down to the tesvav in the Mishnah Berurah, right? There's a lot of different, right? There's a Rashi tesvav, there's a lot of traffic on these pages of going in different directions. But the tesvav there sends you to the Mishnah Berurah. So the Mishnah Berurah is in the tesvav here. It says, V'achei nagu lahakel. So he says, so what's the Mishnah Berurah? Was written by the Chafetz Chaim, who basically is quoting everybody post Ramah and saying, how do we paskin from then on? So he says, Ayin bebir hagra, uvishari achronim, and all the other achronim, shekulan pikpikuma od ala minagahu, that they all weren't so happy with this custom. She'ein lahem shum yisod lo betrei v'chad v'lo betrei al gav betrei. But there's no real basis for this 2-1, 2-2. We really should hold that way. Brahma dochak rak l'kayim aminag. The Ramah kvetched. So it sounds like the Ramah kvetched in order to, because he saw people were doing it, and therefore he wanted to, you know, find them a source. But he worked hard to find them in the source. V'lachin hayiri l'daver l'dvar Hashem, somebody who fears the word of God. And yiri Hashem, someone who's, it's unclear what that means, by the way, when the Mishnah Berurah says, therefore yiri shamayim should be strict. So is he talking to me? Is he talking to, like, our chevra? Or is he talking to, you know, yiri shamayim should be strict, but you? that's always a question. You should work very hard to find regular avos. You should work, you know, regular plated branches. Which are 3 and 3 on each individual branch. And see later on and sifhei where it's discussed. So basically, the Mishnah Berurah turns around and says, yeah, the Ramah might have been quoting people that have that custom, but we don't have it anymore. We don't do it anymore, and you shouldn't do it anymore. In the Be'er Halacha to the right, we don't do it inside, he says very clearly, he says, even if there's only one of these, of one good hadas in town, one 3x3 hadas in town, you should use that one rather than use the 2-in-1 thing. Alright? So that's his, that's the Mishnah Berurah's conclusion here, that yes, even though there might have been those that have this tradition to be lenient, right? He says that you should work very hard not to. I would add into this whole little piece about somebody did it, somebody didn't do it, right? There's the famous Gemara in Shabbos that in Rabbi Eliezer's town, when there was a bris on Shabbos, right? Rabbi Eliezer, everybody most assumed that you could do whatever is necessary, absolutely necessary to do for a bris that you couldn't do before Shabbos, right? You could do on Shabbos. You can do on Shabbos. So obviously you have to cut the kid on Shabbos, otherwise it won't work. If you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. But any other things, if you could have warmed up the water before Shabbos, so warm up the water before Shabbos. Anything you could have done before Shabbos. Rabbi Eliezer said no. Rabbi Eliezer is famous for saying that no, you can do anything you want if, as long as it has to do with the bris, you can do it on Shabbos. And the Gemara records that in his town, they used to, on Shabbos, used to go out and chop the tree in order to bring in the firewood, and they used to light a fire, and then they used to take the metal, and therefore they would have sharpened the knife, and that way they would have their knife ready. They do all this on Shabbos Kodesh. So in the Gemara comments that Rebbe Eliezer's town, they like lived a long life, there's some kind of reward for the people of Rebbe Eliezer's town, and they continued that tradition forever of keeping Rebbe Eliezer's halacha. So it could be that's what's going on, a similar thing is going on here. That because there was a right, we have actually have a tradition of doing it, right? So therefore, you can't deny them that tradition. But it seems like by the time the Mishnah Berurah was lost, and I could look it up. I need to look it up again. But I have a feeling during at least the Mahari Isserlin, the Trumas Hadeshen, I'm not sure he was asking a real shaila either. You know why I'm saying that?
So when did he live?
He lived about 100 years before the Ramah. He lived around 1300s, I think. But he might not have been asking a real practical question either, because he, although his sefer is written in Shilas and Tshuvos format, he made up all the Shilas.
Oh, right, you said that, yeah.
Well, we quoted him last week, right? He's the one who made up all the questions. So, one of my friends, like, went down, like, wouldn't you love to be the rabbi that guy gets called at 3 a.m, Rabbi, I can't sleep, I gotta know. Tell me, is saying the third paragraph of Kriya Shema Dindo Reiser Dindo Rabban. I can't sleep without knowing this. Right? So I'm not sure that there was a real tradition post Gemara times of actually doing this. I think the Ramah is pointing out just that if you have this tradition, then in theory it would be okay. But the Mishnah Berurah is clearly saying that we really should do away with it.
I have a question. Since the Mechaber actually did not say that it was pasul,
right?
Is it possible that in Sephardic communities it was treated one way and in Ashkenazi communities treated another?
I don't think so. I think he really did say it was pasul. I think that's what the Ramah is pointing at. I think he really held it was pasul. The real way of finding that out is that the Mechaber didn't really make up his own shittos. Well, at least he said he didn't. He kind of did. But his chap is that he's all based on previous sources. I mean, the Rambam, the Rif, and the Rush. So it makes up his bastin, so to speak.
So you could.
So you can look right. You got to see where he's quoting from. I have a feeling if you look in the Rambam, I did not have the chance, but if you take a look at the Rambam, you might see clearly what was held, and
so this is almost like a shorthand of those three sources.
Right. His main book was the Beis Yosef. He writes it himself that his main book was the Beis Yosef, which is where it's all quoted from. This is all. These are all things that over the summer shiur was on this. These are all that the Beis Yosef is where he collected all the Rishonim, and he boasts in the introduction that never before has such a large collection of Sfarim been used to write a book. And I have this huge library, and it's all wonderful. And you point out that was the first person ever to boast about his library, because he was the first person to openly say, I'm not paskening based on Mesorah, I'm paskening based on Sfarim. right? Which was the big difference, and some of that was the change of the era of the Rishon to the era of the Achronim. Right? There was no longer a direct Masorah. So the Beis Yosef is collecting everything that was beforehand, and then he writes in his introduction to Shulchan Aruch, like, I realize that that's a lot for people to learn. So I collected everything together into a Shulchan Aruch, and my intention is, and I divide the Shulchan Aruch up into 30 different parts. And my intention is that you do one part a day, and therefore you review the entire Shulchan Aruch once a month. So if that's very scary, because the Shulchan Aruch is on the bottom shelf there, and very, very thick, takes up 2/3 of the bottom shelf. So that's a lot to cover on a monthly basis. But what he was really driving at is that he was saying, like, well, it's not very much. The Shulchan Aruch itself is not that much material. It's all the commentaries around the side. It's not necessarily that much. Now, there is, I mean, you can look here. There is a pretty significant amount, but he does write in the introduction that he recommends that you learn the entire Shulchan Aruch once a month. That was his take.
Cool.
Okay. That was his,
when we retire.
That was his thing. So, yeah. Okay. So, that was that. So we can cover a little bit. All right, so we actually ended last week by the right in the middle of the page, Lema Kisinai on Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph. Right. Okay, the previous sugya was about Yish Dichui Yitzel Mitzvos, and now right. So Lema Kisinai, right? So there is a. So say that this previous idea is really a machlokes tanayim. Okay, so what's going on here? So the previous sugya, the little thing about Rav Papa, right, was arguing about whether if a mitzvah was impossible to be done, so is it as if it was fulfilled, right? That's like with kisui hadam, right? If the blood was covered by the wind and then became uncovered, right? So Rav Papa comes along and says you got to cover it again, right? Or this, or if there was this date, right? This date grew on the top of the hadas, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So then it would be kosher. But what about if it wasn't there in the beginning of Yontif and only grew on the course of Yontif, right? So do you lose that possibility? And therefore we had this dispute within Rav Papa. We had a question about whether Rav Papa would say that while he would agree that you have to cover up the blood again, maybe that's only because it's a chumrah. But to be lenient based on it and say that that the hadas will be good if the date grows, maybe that he won't be willing to do. So the Gemara concluded by saying teku. So the Gemara says lema kisinai. So that maybe that's a machlokas tanayim, right? Right. Rav Papa's an amora. Rav Papa's living later, right? Maybe it's a machlokas amongst tanayim, which means that it would be found in a brisa or a mishnah. Now, for my first 10 years of learning Gemara, I thought the lema kisinai was like a statement. Right, it was like, oh, maybe this is also a dispute amongst the Rishonim, amongst the Tanayim, and let's see, let's compare, let's see, and if it is, that would be like really cool, and if it's not, so that's not so cool. Like, okay, it's not a big deal. So I don't remember at what point I figured it out. Maybe Rav Schechter might have made a comment in Shir along these lines. The Lema Kisinai is really a question. Lema Kisinai is really asking, how could it be that the Amorayim have a dispute? Didn't the Tanayim have the same dispute? And if the Tanayim had the same dispute, that means that it already came to a resolution, and that means that the Amorayim should know what the resolution is, and therefore they shouldn't be fighting about it anymore. Right? So Lema Kisinai is a question, and that also explains why pretty much every time there's a Lema Kisinai, the Gemara goes on to disprove and say why it's not. Right. Then goes on and says, no, it's really not, because it's really a different case, and really it might be in that case that someone might agree. And, right, the Gemara will go ahead and resolve it. Why do they have to resolve it? Just say, unless it's just a Miso Shel Torah, which is a very important thing, but why do they have to go ahead and resolve it? Right? Why do we have to work so hard to resolve it? So the answer is no, because it's really a kash, it's really a question on the Moraim. How could the Amoraim be fighting about this? It has already been asked and answered before. It has already been fought about already for a while. So here's the Gemara asked, over veluktan puzzle. Divi Rabbi Elazar. Divi Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Tzadok. V'chachamim machshirim. And the chachamim say that it's kasher. What is that talking about? What is that talking about? So, the Rashi doesn't tell us. There, Avar Velakhtan. So if you take a look at Rashi, if you go to the right side, about 8 lines down from where we are, it says Avar Velakhtan, right? You violated it and you removed it. So what's it talking about? It's talking about Li'inve Hadas. It's talking about the berries of the Hadas, right? Remember back in the Mishnah, it said you can't have too many berries. You have too many berries, you can pick them off. Don't pick them off on Yontif, right? So it's talking about, let's say you violated it and you took them off. There are more berries than leaves. Usnani miyatan kasher. The Mishnah said if you take off, it's kasher. Don't do it on yantiv mishum shvus, because it's a prohibition. Shadomo lemisakin kli, because it looks like you're fixing the kli. Umachshiro, and making it ready to be done. Right, what malacha is that describing? Right, that's the malacha of. What malacha is that describing? It's the malacha of makav apatish. Right, that's malacha. You're not allowed to complete things. Right, that's what it's describing. Right, you're making it ready for use. V'im aver miyat and paslan. If you violate it, so then it's no good. As k'dem afarish time of us, as we're going to explain. Right, but what did our Mishnah say? The Mishnah just said you can't do it on Yantif. So our Gemara wants to know, or the Tanayim wanted to know. Well, what happens if you did do it on Yantif? So you feel bad, shkayach, right? You feel bad. You shouldn't have taken the berries off on Yantif, right? It wasn't the right thing to do, right? Okay, so you took them off. So now, can you use the hadas? Right? Does the hadas now work? Right? Avar v'laktan pasul. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Tzadok says, pasul. You're not allowed to use it anymore. The chachamim machshirin, and the chachamim say it's okay. So what? So what does that have to do with our? Right, so Savrua, right, Rashi is explaining this, the Rabbanon and the Beis Medrash want to explain how this is really a problem, a question of the Dichui Eitzel Mitzvahs from last week. Right, that's what they want to discuss here. So Savrua, the Chuli Alma Lulav Ein Tzarech Eged. Right, so they said like this, that everybody agrees that the Lulavim don't have to be Eged, that the Lulavim don't have to be bound together. That's the first thing they all agree to. And even if you say that they do require to be bound together, lo yalfinan lulav mi sukkah, don't learn out lulav from sukkah. Dichsiv ba taasev lo mina asoy, right? Because by sukkah it says taasev lo mina asoy, you have to make it and can't have already have been made. It can't have already have been made. I mean, if you have a sukkah that you have a vines, the classic case is you have vines that's attached to the ground, right? And then you take the vines and throw it on top of the sukkah while they're still attached to the ground, right? So is that a good sukkah? No, right? It's not a good sukkah. So, okay, not because it's attached to the sukkah, can't be attached to the ground. Fine. So let me go around, I'm going to cut off all the vines. So is that good? No, that's no good. Why is it no good? Because that's what we call tasev lo mina asway. It has to be made, it can't have been made. You say, my love, maybe this is the dispute. The man, the pasul savar mir yesh dichui eitzel mitzvos, the one that says that it's no good, says that there is dichui by mitzvos. Uman the machshir, the one says it's kasher, savar lo amir yesh dichui eitzel mitzvos. The one that says that it is kasher, he says that we don't have a problem of dichui eitzel mitzvos. Meaning what? Meaning that if sukkah started and the berries are attached to it, right, so the one that says that it's possible says dichui eitzel mitzvos. That means that it's no good, right? The mitzvah started, berries were on, it's no good. Well, the second opinion says no, lo amrinu yesh dichui eitzel mitzvos, and therefore it should still be okay. Okay, I realized that, I realized it's later on here than it is on there. And need a little bit of time to prepare for the next thing. So maybe we'll stop here. Although next week I don't think I'm going to be here Tuesday night anymore. I think we're going away a little bit.
Okay.
So we'll put this on hold for a little bit. Okay? All right. Okay. Have a good evening.